Information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
And it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Security experts and airline officials agree privately that the simultaneous hijacking of four jetliners was an inside job, probably indicating complicity beyond malfeasance. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 137 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 21st, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster for the site and show. With all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, District 9, predictive programming, Nazi media, Don Hewitt and Dylan's back pages, Novak, 913 Truth and New Loose Change, Lockerbie, lockdowns, curfews, cops and camps, Obamasiah's greenhouse, voodoo and economics, S&M, Coke and DIY tobacco, IBM, DNA, fat gamers, fake data, zombies, mass graves, food world order, and so much more. August 21st, 2009, episode 137, MediaMonarchy.com. Uprising. That is the amazingly large new single from Muse. Their new record, The Resistance, drops very soon. My friends, you might recall, if you've been a follower of MediaMonarchy.com for quite some time, that the UK trio known as Muse are completely aware of the New World Order agenda. Total 9/11 truthers. They played a big headlining UK show a couple of years ago, and he basically had Google Terrorstorm written on his shirt, and it got written up everywhere from NME around the world. They're trying to make their big stateside break. They're on the cover of the brand new issue of Spin. And in page one of the article, Matt Bellamy, lead singer, songwriter, gets right into 9/11 Truth right there. Over in the chat room on ZeroPointRadio.com, we're just now talking about the song. Even talking about apparently new anti-police state music from Devo. And I think it's just amazing how we've seen, and I try and give you a taste of this each week, that artists are out there and are tapping into the zeitgeist of what is really going down. Some may not be explicit. They might not be 9/11 truthers or whatever. But we've heard, you know, the shadow government, Federal Reserve from Thievery Corporation, Aspartame from Superdrag, Chemtrails from Beck, Battle for the Sun from Placebo, tons and tons. And I'll try and give you that each week. And that's hopefully why you return, my friends, for episode 137 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 21st, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as the growing family of sub-sites like foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com. But we're blasting out, as usual, as always, from the home base of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. Also thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and 92.3 out in Casper, Wyoming, broadcasting live, as well, the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. It's 1 p.m. on the East Coast. Again, thanks to Free Radio Olympia, Boulder Free Radio, Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org from right here in the People's Republic of Oregon. You can, of course, hit me up on FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org, and any other number of growing social portals. There's so much, so very much to go over, and I couldn't even read through the blurbs in the intro to the show. I ran out of time and ran out of breath. And if I don't make this a compact, efficient show, I'm going to run out of time. So let's glance at Google News right now. And again, my friends, it's August 21st, 2009. Existing home sales in U.S. jumped to two-year high. Bernanke says the economy could grow soon. It could. We, of course, have the alleged Lockerbie bomber released. We'll get into that in just a little bit. We've also got the King of Pop's burial postponed until September 3rd. Eli Lilly to pay $22.5 million settlement in a West Virginia lawsuit over Zyprexa. A Forest Service worker dies in Eastern Oregon. Ron Paul stays on message, and so much more. That's just what's popping right now. Now for a turn in our songbooks to page one on MediaMonarchy.com, what we're going to start the show off with today, and what I have to admit is forefront in my mind, District 9. We've got a great article from Lee Rogers of RogueGovernment.com that gets right into this amazing science fiction film with sophisticated New World Order propaganda. And Lee writes, The sophistication of New World Order propaganda originating from Hollywood is reaching an insane level. Proof of this can be seen with the new release of the Peter Jackson-produced and Neil Blomkamp-directed sci-fi film District 9. Had the opportunity to see the film over the weekend and was blown away with the multiple layers of mind control programming that this movie has. Anyone who's researched anything to do with the New World Order should immediately go see this movie and analyze it. We live in a world in which everything is backwards. The corporate-controlled media conceals the truth, whereas Hollywood works of fiction usually end up revealing it. That is the key point, I believe, in this piece. Continuing. This is definitely true for District 9, as this film is obviously meant to condition the viewing audience to accept current realities and even future realities that the global controllers are preparing. The film also fictionalizes many real-life truths, which is very interesting in its own right. Skipping down to the last paragraph, despite all the propaganda in District 9, have to admit that the film is very well done and entertaining, but obviously contains all sorts of references and themes to things that are actually happening or that the global elite are preparing to do to human populations. The only difference is that the film depicts the global elite through this fictional multinational corporation doing things to the aliens. A well-done film, but it contains some of the most slickly crafted New World Order propaganda ever put in a Hollywood movie. District 9.
Nobody comes back late at night anymore. They have more security.
The government noticed that they were moving into new areas. That's when things started to get out of hand.
They don't belong here.
They're spending so much money to keep them here when they could be spending it on other things. At least they're keeping them separate from us.
A lot of bad things started to happen.
They must just go. I don't know where they go. They must just go.
Breathtaking point. People are living in fear.
Why don't you just leave? How do your weapons work?
I just want everyone watching this right now to learn from what has happened.
That's a quick trailer from District 9, and that doesn't even come close to giving you what the film has. I saw it less than 24 hours ago. I'm still kind of stewing on it. It's amazing on a multitude of levels. Watching it in the theater, and of course you get the trailers and for things, movies like Legion, and just so much. As Lee said in the article, it's so amazing that the news is filled with lies, but Hollywood is filled with truths? Not exactly. It's not that simple by a long shot. It just struck me how apparent it's all becoming. Sitting in a theater, in a big mainstream, big-ass theater, with all the popcorn munchers around. Do they get it? Do they see it? We made reference in that piece to how it relates to things that are going down right now. And the easiest one, and again, a hat tip to Clyde Lewis for pointing out recently on the Ground Zero Lounge. The military is hiring internment specialists. They're hiring people to work at camps. Again, I can't even fully get into the film right now. It was so good, it kind of made me queasy. Linked up, of course, you can also check out a bunch of reviews and also the original short that District 9 is based on, Alive in Joburg. And again, you can go down the hole. Unfortunately, I'm sure we'll see a wave of sequels. I'm sure once the fat cats saw the dollar signs roll in over the last 2 weeks. They're instantly going, hey, let's get to writing District 10. But let's keep moving into the media monarchy, my friends, from the Daily Mail. UK kids could be barred from classic films because they have smoking. Children under 18 will be banned from watching films that depict characters smoking under plans being considered by council thought police. An 18 certificate, usually reserved for movies with violent and sexual content, and again, this is the UK rating system. An 18 certificate will be slapped on any film featuring smokers that fails to explain cigarettes are bad for you. The ban will target new releases, but could affect older films such as 101 Dalmatians, Peter Pan, The Little Mermaid, and Pinocchio if they are reissued and reclassified. Casablanca, Titanic, Lord of the Rings would be restricted to adults under the plans proposed for Liverpool. Now again, these are just ratings. And much like a parental advisory sticker, it's going to make you want to watch it more. And do all those movies also point out that, you know, lies and murder and war and all those things are bad, too? Maybe they do. Television Under the Swastika, a documentary that goes into Nazi media. Now, this is not a new documentary, but it's got a recent DVD release and a new write-up from Film Threat, filmthreat.com. From 1935 through 1944, Nazi Germany took the unexpected lead in the development of TV broadcasting. While the reach of the Nazi television was relatively limited, mostly to the political elite in Berlin and to army hospitals, the new medium nonetheless found a diverse amount of programming ranging from cabaret-style entertainment to cooking shows to the tried-and-true propaganda posturing. Michael Klopft's documentary Television Under the Swastika provides a brief overview of the Nazi foray into TV programming. Surprisingly, a great deal of 35mm films used for the broadcast still survive, though no footage of the live telecast survive from that pre-kinescope era. But despite the frequent awfulness of the programming, this documentary provides a fascinating look at how the Nazis quickly recognized TV's power and tried to manipulate it for their own devious purposes. For anyone interested in 20th century German history and in the development of TV as the most powerful mass media of the modern world, Television Under the Swastika provides an invaluable journey into the very unusual early days of television's rise. This entire documentary is available on Google Video, Television Under the Swastika. Just another thing that we got from Nazi scientists. A disturbing story, funny at first glance, but a little more disturbing when you think about it for a second. Like a complete unknown, Bob Dylan, hassled by some uncool cops, a novice policewoman picked up a, quote, eccentric old man acting suspiciously, completely unaware that it was Bob Dylan. This from The Telegraph, which again, going to the foreign press to learn about something that happened in New Jersey. The 22-year-old officer was dispatched after residents in the New Jersey town of Long Branch had phoned to complain that a man in the Latin Quarter was acting suspiciously. When the officer asked the man for identification papers, he did not have a driver's license or other form of ID to prove his identity. The songwriter, famous for such hits as Like a Rolling Stone and Mr. Tambourine Man, was then ordered into the back of the police car and driven back to his hotel to authenticate his story. It was not until she radioed her colleagues at the police station to ask who he was did she realize her mistake. A spokesman for Long Branch Police confirmed the incident with Dylan took place last month at the seaside town on the Jersey Shore. Quote, "It's been the talk of the station," said one officer. The policewoman was very young and did not recognize Dylan. There was another officer with her, and even he didn't recognize Dylan. Both said they never listened to his music and had no idea what he looked like. Dylan, 68 years old, who was in the area for a concert with Willie Nelson and John Mellencamp, has been spotted out alone previously. Rather than use a chauffeur-driven car after a concert in Belfast in 1991, he was spotted waiting at a bus stop by a TV crew. Earlier this year, Bob Dylan climbed back to the top of the British charts for the first time in 38 years with his album Together Through Life, which we give you the link over to Alex Constantine's Blacklist. That goes into the writer for, I believe, 9 out of 10 of the songs on Dylan's latest record, Together Through Life, all written by Robert Hunter, who is, of course, an admitted LSD guinea pig, connected, of course, to Timothy Leary and probably the agency. Dylan hassled by some uncool cops. So it's kind of funny, but then on the other level, you look at it and go, oh, so you're not allowed to walk around without your papers, please. Don Hewitt, creator of 60 Minutes, has died at the age of 86. This from the agency French Press. Don Hewitt, creator of famed U.S. news program 60 Minutes, died on Wednesday at the age of 86. Hewitt, considered by many to be a major innovator in U.S. television journalism, was diagnosed with cancer earlier this year and succumbed Wednesday, surrounded by his family in Bridgehampton, New York. He devoted most of his career, which spanned 60 years, to the hugely influential 60 Minutes, which introduced a magazine format to TV news with a mix of hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and lighter offbeat pieces. The show, which Hewitt ran as executive producer since it first aired in 1968, was widely considered the much-imitated gold standard of U.S. TV news. He stepped down from that post in 2004, becoming the executive producer of CBS News. His career touched on many of the epochal moments of the last half century, directing the first network television newscast in May 1948, and of course coverage of the first televised U.S. presidential debate between John F. Kennedy and Richard Milhouse Nixon in 1960. Don Hewitt's death, of course, follows that of Walter Cronkite, renowned CBS television news host, who died in July. Flashback link to Media Monarchy on that, where we, of course, note that maybe Walter Cronkite is now happy to be sitting on the right hand of Satan. More obituaries. There's been a lot of media-related obituaries as of late. And also lots of 60s-era criminals being let out of prison. But now we get to the Prince of Darkness. The self-described Prince of Darkness. Robert Novak, conservative commentator, dies at the age of 78. What is important to note, my friends, is that on 9/13/2001... Robert Novak, in his article Beyond Pearl Harbor, writes, quote, "Security experts and airline officials agree privately that the simultaneous hijacking of four jetliners was an inside job, probably indicating complicity beyond malfeasance. This makes all the more ominous Tuesday's national catastrophe and its dismal consequences." The scan of the hard copy of that original article is linked up for you. And again, by way of 9/11 blogger, now that the Prince of Darkness is dead, now is the time to recall that 911blogger.com exposed Robert Novak as one of the earliest and early commentators to identify 9/11 as a quote-unquote inside job on his September 13th, 2001 column. This from Reuters. Robert Novak, conservative political columnist known as the Prince of Darkness, and who unleashed a political firestorm by publishing the name of an undercover CIA operative, died on Tuesday. He was 78. Robert Novak stopped writing his column in July 2008 after 45 years when he was diagnosed with a brain tumor, saying his prognosis was dire.
Chicago Sun-Times columnist Robert Novak has died after a year-long battle with brain cancer. The newspaper says the longtime Washington fixture died at his home early Tuesday. Novak made headlines in 2003 when he identified Valerie Claim as a CIA operative in his column. Although illegal, he was never charged with a crime. In July of 2008, doctors discovered Novak had a malignant brain tumor. Just 5 days earlier, he struck a pedestrian in Washington with his car. He told reporters he didn't see the man, but witnesses say the victim was sprawled across the hood of Novak's black Corvette. Days later, Novak said he fell ill while visiting his daughter on Cape Cod. He was rushed to a nearby hospital where doctors performed tests and discovered the tumor. Soon after, Novak announced he was retiring from journalism. He had been a columnist for decades and also co-hosted a show on CNN. He was 78. Diane Kepley, The Associated Press.
Now, as you heard there, as some others have pointed out, the timing of discovering the tumor 5 days after he had mowed down a pedestrian, people have pointed out as some kind of bad karma. But we're not going to go there. We're going to get into, now that we've opened the door, to the latest 9/11 updates. And of course, we are just a mere few weeks away from the 8th anniversary of the day that changed everything. The 9/11 anniversary this year falls on a Friday. That's Media Monarchy Day. That's going to be episode 140. And I'm going to get together something good for you. However, right now, 9/11 updates. Docs, Delta 1989, National Geo, and new loose change. We first mention the 5th annual 9/11 Film Festival, Raising Questions, Demanding Answers, going on September 9th and 10th in Oakland, California. But by way of History Commons, as well as 9/11 Blogger, more on Delta 1989. And these are additions to the complete 9/11 timeline on HistoryCommons.org as of August 17th. Most of the new entries in the last week on History Commons have concerned the red herring Delta 1989, which was a suspected hijack on the day of 9/11, but was never taken over by terrorists. Shortly after the hijacking of United 93, both Delta 1989 and other aircraft had to turn to avoid the hijacked airliner. And shortly after the Pentagon was hit, Delta Airlines ordered the plane to land in Cleveland, but didn't tell the FAA. The pilot then changed course and failed to respond to an FAA message, causing the FAA to think it may be a hijack. However, when Needs told the FAA that the Delta 1989 plane was a confirmed hijack at 9:45 a.m., an FAA controller disagreed. Delta Airlines reported four missing planes around 9:50 a.m., the same time as Cleveland Airport and City Building started to be evacuated. The pilot's failure to use a standard aviation term shortly after 10 a.m. made controllers suspicious, but SWAT teams and the FBI finally allowed passengers off the plane around noon. There are also several entries about fighters being scrambled from non-alert bases, such as an unsuccessful attempt by Needs to launch planes from Minnesota after 9:40 a.m., Needs also contacted Selfridge Air Force Base to get unarmed jets sent after either Delta 1989 or United 93 just before 10 a.m., but the planes ended up returning to base instead. Pilots in Toledo originally threw a Needs request they thought was a joke. Pilots in Toledo originally threw a Needs request they launch was a joke, but were in the air at 10:17 a.m. In addition to the Delta 1989 entries, there are two more about the Langley jets that took off at about 9:30. They were initially given an incorrect heading, flying east instead of north, and were not immediately redirected. Finally, nearly 3 years before the 7/7 London bombings, British counterterrorism officials discussed a possible terror attack against the London Underground. Every active mention an incident that I've just read for you is a link in a new documented entry on the complete 9/11 timeline on HistoryCommons.org. Part 2 from Kevin Ryan, demolition access to the WTC towers. Of course, this issue came up again recently when an Inspector General's report showed that the feds were able to sneak tons of bombs and dummy bomb-making materials into dozens of federal buildings. So, of course, if they were able to do that, why couldn't people do it on 9/11? As I've pointed out many times, the documentary Man on Wire, if those wacky French acrobats could sneak in and move tons of equipment all the way up the stairs and rig up this elaborate op, don't you think black ops could do that as well? William Fox, who was recently interviewed by Media Monarchy on the recent Ardent Century and Vibrant Response drills. They've got more on Vibrant Response and how the Ghost Troop and all the false flag watchers keeping an eye on the drills that, of course, are still going on and we can't even help to keep track of all of them. Jerry Mazza responds to Joel Hirshhorn's article, 9/11 Mind Swell. I don't like the infighting. I do like constructive criticism. We don't get into the game of Which host do you like best? Which website do you think? I like this guy, and I'm with... Hell with all that. A quick We Are Change video where Barney Frank dismisses the scientific report on explosive residue found in 9/11 dust, of course covered by Raw Story and tons of other places. Barney Frank doesn't want to have anything to do with it. He, of course, has tons of interviews to do about how he stood up to that woman who said the word Nazi and Hitler. Barney Frank, of course, sometimes does good work with Ron Paul, Industrial Hemp, and otherwise. A press release by way of PR Newswire, but it's from National Geographic. Their new 9/11 Science and Conspiracy will set your crazy conspiracy theorist head straight. America watched in horror as September 11, 2001 unfolded before our eyes. 8 years have passed and no stone has been left unturned in the painstaking process of piecing together what happened that fateful day. Yet according to a 2006 poll, 33% of us do not accept the U.S. government's account. 33? Were the attacks really the work of Al-Qaeda terrorists, or is it possible something even more sinister was at work? On Monday, August 31st, National Geographic Channel's 9/11 Science and Conspiracy conducts a forensic investigation to test tenets of some of the most common conspiracy theories. Did the Twin Towers really collapse from fires? Or did explosives inside cause the buildings to implode? Was the Pentagon hit by a missile and not a commercial airliner? And why do so many people believe theories like these? Now, of course, this documentary is about the science. And that's, again, all they ever want to focus on is the science and the ballistics and things we can debate about forever. About the 3 shots in 6 seconds, was it a Mannlicher Carcano or was it a German Mauser? What about the intel agencies? What about the insider trading? What about the forewarnings? What about Buzzy Krongard, CIA, Deutsche Bank, P-TECH, Marsha McLennan? We don't want to talk about that stuff. So again, Media Monarchy is all about 9/11 truth, but I don't worship in the house of controlled demolition. Now, having said all that, we're going to close off this 9/11 updates with, there's a new trailer, and actually I'm not going to play the clip, but a new trailer for the forthcoming iteration of Loose Change 9/11, an American coup, coming soon from microcinema.com. It's narrated by 9/11 truther and actor Rescue Me star Daniel Sinjata, and it'll be interesting to see what the newest Loose Change goes into. Now we get to Scotland and Hillary and Libya and terrorists. Scotland releases Lockerbie bomber on compassionate grounds. Now, William Blum, who knows a thing or two about black ops, he has an article on Consortium News, Pan Am 103 Verdict, Justice or Politics. However, we'll go into the mainline story from the CIA's favorite newspaper. That's right, the Washington Post. The Libyan convicted of the Lockerbie bombing was released on compassionate grounds by Scottish authorities on Thursday, allowing him to return to Tripoli to die with his family. Abdel Basset Ali al-Megrahi, a former Libyan intelligence agent who is terminally ill, was convicted in 2001 for his role in the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103. The plane exploded over the Scottish town of Lockerbie, killing 270 people, 189 of them American. Speaking at the Scottish government's ministerial headquarters in Edinburgh, Scottish Justice Secretary Kenny McCaskill said that humanity was a defining characteristic of the Scottish people and that, quote, our belief dictates that justice be served but mercy be shown. He said that Megrahi should, quote, be released on compassionate grounds and allowed to return to Libya to die.
Gene Zerv is following this breaking news story. Gene, what do you have?
Suzanne, the Obama administration has been informally notified that one of the convicted Lockerbie bombers will be released by Scottish authorities. The U.S. government will not be happy.
270 people died when Pan Am Flight 103 went down over Lockerbie, Scotland in 1988. Only one man was convicted of that crime, Libyan Abdel Basset Almagrahi. He is now 57, suffering from terminal prostate cancer, and Scottish officials have informally notified the U.S. that he will be released on compassionate grounds, according to senior State Department officials. The brother of one Lockerbie victim is deeply disappointed.
This is a bitter moment in this 21-year odyssey.
The U.S. has been outspoken in opposing Almagrahi's release. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton underlined the U.S. point of view just Tuesday.
I just think it is absolutely wrong to release someone who has been imprisoned based on evidence about his involvement in such a horrendous crime.
Let's look at Wikipedia's conspiracy theory page about Pan Am 103. They suggest a number of alternative explanations for the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 on December 21, 1988. Some of these theories preceded the official investigation by Scottish police and the FBI. Others arose through different interpretation of evidence presented at Libyan agent Megrahi's trial, yet others have been developed independently by yada, yada, yada. This goes into Iran, CIA drug smuggling, alleged framing of Libya, forensic science, radio detonation, and I believe, unless I have my terror events all jumbled up, that we just went over this a couple weeks ago because we noted that years ago Der Spiegel published a photo purportedly showing a cylindrical-like object streaking through the sky immediately before 103 blew up. A couple flashbacks, as we have covered this from time to time on MediaMonarchy.com. Jumping back to December 2007, Hollywood to frame Iran for Lockerbie. And of course, you know, Steven Spielberg's down for that. Lockerbie evidence not disclosed. That goes back to August of last year. Let's look into Police State International now, my friends. ID cards, curfews, cops, and camps. First up, from the Washington Post, with a nice little photo posted up for you of the new DC-1 card. DC residents criticize new DC-1 ID cards to access services. They're supposed to make your wallet a bit thinner and give you everything you need to check out a book at the library or visit a rec center or a public building. But the district government starts rolling out the highly touted DC-1 cards. DC1card.dc.gov. Some residents are rebelling against the initiative to put their identity on one piece of plastic. Community email lists across the city have been hit with a wave of complaints about the cards. Residents are raising questions about whether the new plastic cards are just another example of a government initiative that hasn't been well thought out. Which just gives credence to the incompetence theory of things. Well, they're just stupid bureaucrats. They don't know what they're doing. Which on the stupid bureaucratic level may actually be true, but as it comes down from near the top of the pyramid, with the Club of Rome and the Committee of 300 and the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Bilderbergs and the Trilaterals and all the media mockingbirds, you're going to get an ID card. Civil Air Patrol aircraft to fly low over DC metro area. I believe that's already happened. Be afraid. Military jets dancing above Storm Lake, Iowa. That's from ZWire.com. As again, ardent century and vibrant response. Still rage on. The FBI says the Boston cops need M16s to prevent Boston from becoming another Mumbai. That's actually the excuse that they give. And again, we've covered it many, many times, especially places like Boston and Chicago. They are trying to beef up their beefed up military police. More on the complete now exposure and documentation of racist radio host Hal Turner, a trained and paid FBI agent provocateur. They've now admitted it. It's on the record. It's in court. This is what happens in a police state. People are paid to aggravate. It's classic. It's still COINTELPRO. It may not have that name, but that's what it is. And this is what happens in a police state. You have the police and military paying people to infiltrate groups, to rile people up. And again, we played a clip last week and somebody was talking about, you know, you need to watch out for people who are saying, yeah, we need to take up arms because, yeah, those are the people that are probably the feds. More on Hal Turner from Threat Level. FBI paid right-wing blogger charged with making threats to judges. But if we jump to the Wall Street Journal, cops use an old Brinks truck to, quote-unquote, shame suspects.
This old truck is the newest weapon in the battle against crime in Peoria, Illinois.
Ready?
The retired Brinks truck is armed with 5 infrared surveillance cameras, foam-filled tires that won't go flat, a padlocked hood, and protective screens over the headlights and taillights. It's known around town as the Armadillo.
You know, truck was a response to problem houses in various neighborhoods, and the difficulty in really addressing them, the difficulty in tracking them, and difficulty in finding a way to remediate the problems they create.
When the 12,000-pound eyesore arrives in front of a neighborhood trouble spot, like a suspected drug den, it sends a clear message to the occupants.
They've got the cameras on it, you know you're being watched, and so you know for at least, you know, anywhere from 3 to 7 days, that thing is going to be have cameras on you and your house, and you're going to be watched.
Armored surveillance truck, they affectionately call the Armadillo. Of course, if it plays in Peoria, watch for it coming soon to you. Back to New Jersey. New Jersey City considers an adult curfew after the recent crime spate. That's from the Associated Press. But now, more ridiculousness. How about the cops tasering grandpa and a pregnant woman?
What went wrong? Cops broke up a child's baptism party for excessive noise, and in the process, managed to taser a grandfather and a pregnant woman. Tonight, a Manassas family says cops went too far. Fox News' Robbie Chavez locked down in the newsroom to kick us off. Now, Robbie.
Brian, the 55-year-old homeowner is a church family counselor and a Bible study teacher. He was hosting a party for his new godchild. He and the pregnant mother of the baptized boys face serious charges. Tonight, they're fighting back. They say Prince William County police used excessive force just to quiet down a backyard party. It was supposed to be a happy day to celebrate the baptism of these two little boys. This home video captures the party moments before police arrive following a noise complaint. Edgar Rodriguez says the backyard celebration came to an abrupt halt. After some confusion, his 55-year-old father said he was asked for an ID and handed it over. Then he was tasered 3 times.
It's now being so normalized, the massive, disgusting amount of police brutality going on, that in just the short stretch of a couple of years, they've pretty much gotten us used to tasers. Mission accomplished. Uh-oh, they're here. Cops arrest woman for blogging about them. A persistent blogger annoys the police and winds up in jail. A 34-year-old woman, the mother of a 12-year-old girl, has been locked up in a Virginia jail for 3 weeks and could remain there for at least another month. Her crime? Blogging about the police. Alicia Strom, who appears unable to make the $750 bail, was arrested outside Charlottesville on July 16th when police raided her house, confiscating notebooks, computers, and camera equipment. Wonder if she'll ever get those back. Now, this goes on to be a battle between her and the cops. iHeartEJade.blogspot.com. That's her blog. The last thing she posted when they raided her house was, of course, uh-oh, they're here. I was going to make reference to when the Armadillo was spying on a suspected drug house. When you see that thing, you better know that hey, if there's any cops in there, you should probably watch out, because... Hawaii cops arrested in Vegas on pot charges. This by way of click2houston.com, Dateline Honolulu. Police arrested two Honolulu Police Department officers in Las Vegas last Saturday night because authorities said the men were using marijuana. The officers were in Vegas for a softball tournament for police officers and firefighters. That's very funny. What isn't very funny and what ends this Police State International posting on ID cards, curfews, cops, and camps, it's Rex 84 and your internment camp awaits you. This from dprogram.net. That's dprogram.net. And of course, Rex 84 ties in with FEMA and continuity of government. Suspension of the Constitution, martial law, relocation, tied in with the post office. We've got internment specialists being hired to man those camps. And I noticed one of my F-book friends from the media monarchy world had posted up that article, and some folks had already started to talk about it. That's, as I've said many times, what I find really fascinating about Facebook. Is that it's connected me to a bunch of folks that I've known for the last 20 years, but I haven't seen for the last five. And I blast out all my news feeds through Facebook, and people see them, and they're having their cognitive dissonance moments. Hopefully having their oh shit moments about what's really going down. A friend actually commented today on a recent import that was just a list of headlines. I believe it was about the Obamasiah, Mr. Two-Face himself. And she said, I don't know what you write, but it's making me sad. And I guess that's a start. Up next, it's the Ugly Rundown. More on the Police State. Geopolitics, war whores, and so much more. First, from Alex Constantine's Blacklist, America's Summer of Discontent. Some fear a looming class war. Others cite racism. This is actually by Leanne Goodman from the Canadian Press, where, of course, it starts off by mentioning the Oklahoma City bombing. As we've pointed out many, many times here, we're seeing the return to the 90s days of homegrown errorism. And there is some kind of class war, and there is some kind of race war, and we're being prepped for it. And from everything I can gather, we're going to be sheep to the slaughter. More great work from Matthew Rothschild on The Progressive. Pentagon wants the authority to post almost 400,000 military personnel in the U.S. The Pentagon has approached Congress to grant the Secretary of Defense the authority to post almost 400,000 military personnel throughout the United States in times of emergency or major disaster. This request has already occasioned a dispute with the nation's governors, such as the governor of West Virginia, Joe Manchin, wrote a letter. It raises the prospect of U.S. military personnel patrolling the streets of the United States in conflict with the, what's that called? Posse Comitatus Act of 1878. Oh, that's right. That's the thing that says the military can't do law enforcement from Civil War era. In June of this year, the U.S. Northern Command, NORTHCOM, distributed a congressional fact sheet entitled Legislative Proposal for Activation of Federal Reserve Forces for Disasters, and that's funny on a couple of different levels. That proposal would amend current law, thereby, quote, authorizing the Secretary of Defense to order any unit or member of the Army Reserve, Air Force Reserve, Navy Reserve, and the Marine Corps Reserve to active duty for a major disaster or emergency, overriding the wishes of the governors of the states who don't have any states' rights anymore. We may see, again, the amazing predictive programming of the media. We may see our own shattered union. Quote-unquote rumors of a large troop deployment to, guess where? Iraq. Oh, that's right. We handed it over to the Iraqi forces, and then hundreds of people were blown up, and we'll go, oh, well, I guess we'll come back and help out a little more. Just a little more. But that's not all. U.S. to resume training Georgian troops. This from the New York Times. The U.S. is resuming a combat training mission in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia to prepare its army for counterinsurgency operations in Afghanistan, despite the risks of angering Russia, senior DOD official said Thursday. The training effort is intended to prepare Georgian troops to fight at NATO standards alongside American and allied forces in Afghanistan. Russian officials have been informed. American officials said the training should not worry the Kremlin because it would not involve skills that would be useful against a large conventional force like Russia's. This training mission is not about internal defenses or any capabilities that the Georgians would use at home, said Jeff Morrell, the Pentagon press secretary. This is about the United States supporting Georgia's contribution to the war in Afghanistan, which everybody can recognize as needed and valued and appreciated. At the same time, officials in the District of Criminals said the Georgians should not see the new training mission as a military counterweight to Russian influence along Georgia's borders and within the separatist regions they fought over. 1 year ago, the Republic's brief, disastrous war with Russia, froze a similar American training operation that prepared Georgian troops for deployments to Iraq. The flashback to August of last year, U.S. attacks Russia through its client state of Georgia. Documented. Georgia fired first. And Saakashvili ate his tie. Canada to train Mexican police in a $15 million program. That's from the AFP. But more from Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who, of course, was the designated successor. He was not in D.C. during the recent inauguration in case a suitcase nuke went off. Gates would be the Fuhrer. He now says it's a mystery how long U.S. forces will be in Afghanistan. This from the Associated Press. The Pentagon presented a grim portrait of the Afghanistan war last Thursday, offering no assurances about how long Americans will be fighting there or how many U.S. combat troops it'll take to win. Defeating the Taliban and Al-Qaeda will take a few years. That's what Gates said. With success on a larger scale in the desperately poor country, a much larger, longer proposition. He acknowledged that the Taliban has a firm hold on parts of the country President Obama has called vital to U.S. security. Congress wants answers to what lawmakers described as basic questions to soothe a war-weary American public. In the intelligence business, we always used to categorize information in two ways, secrets and mysteries. Mysteries were those where there were too many variables to predict, and I think that how long U.S. forces will be in Afghanistan is in that area. The area of mystery. Are they really war-weary? They are. I mean, we'll see in just a moment that the majority of the country is against the Afghan surge, but yet the Obamasiah lies and continues the Bush wars of aggression because he is a puppet. And if you voted for him, you fell for slick Madison Avenue propaganda. And I'm sorry. And the sooner you realize that, and the sooner you stop going along with this bullshit, the sooner we might be able to scrape something together. Who's funding the Afghan Taliban? You don't want to know. That's right, it's you. And me. And us. The U.S. That's from Reuters. Again, documented. Wayne Madsen and Russia today go into the incestuous. And there's much, much worse language we could use for the relationship between the U.S. government and Blackwater.
Now, the U.S. private security contractor XE, formerly known as Blackwater, is not unfamiliar with difficult headlines. It's still plagued by controversy concerning killing of civilians in a Baghdad street in 2007. And now two former employees have accused the firm and its chief of a violent crusading attitude and even political murders. And with us now is our correspondent Priya Schreeder and our chief contributor Wayne Madsen, an investigative journalist from the U.S., Well, Priya, over to you.
Thanks. Well, new documents have been filed in U.S. District Court by former employees of Blackwater, a private military firm that had been contracted to provide security services to U.S. officials in Iraq. Now, Blackwater became infamous a few years ago when the Iraqi government revoked their license to operate in that country because of a controversial incident in which 17 Iraqis were killed. Now, since then, Blackwater has changed its name to Z and has attempted to distance itself from the controversies of the past. But now these new documents are raising concerns for many. There may have been more going on with Blackwater in Iraq. Well, joining me to discuss the situation is Wayne Madsen, RT contributor and investigative journalist. Wayne, thanks so much for joining me. First of all, if you could tell me a little bit about what were the most shocking allegations that you found in these documents?
Well, we have affidavits from John Doe 1 and John Doe 2. John Doe 1, a former Marine who signed on with Blackwater, stated that the company was smuggling weapons into Iraq hidden in bags of dog food, believe it or not. And also the people who knew too much about the company either had been suspiciously killed, or there may have been plans to kill others who knew too much. So that's what we have from John Doe 1. From John Doe 2, it seems like he was maybe very high up in the organization, knew a lot of things about Eric Prince, the head of Blackwater, permitting something called a man camp to operate in Iraq, where there were prostitutes, including child prostitutes, that Blackwater employees would avail themselves of. So these were the most shocking, amongst many shocking stories that came out of the
right. And I believe that John Doe number 2 had also said that owner Eric Prince had, quote, encouraged and rewarded the destruction of Iraqi life. And, you know, there have been many reports that he might have considered himself a crusader. What can you tell us about that?
Well, we know from John Doe 2's affidavit that Blackwater employees used call signs in communicating in Iraq based on the Knights Templar type words that he tolerated and called Arabs Hajis and ragheads. I mean, this is just outrageous behavior. Thought of himself as a modern-day crusader, hence the reference is probably the Knights Templar who led the campaign in the Crusades against the Muslims. But what we have here is an individual who received billions of dollars in U.S. contracts, still is under contract with the U.S. government, who fancied himself as somebody who wanted to wipe out Islam and kill Arabs and Muslims.
And why do you think that Obama did extend the contracts for Blackwater or Z in Iraq?
Well, Blackwater was very tied in through the contract process in the State Department. The Inspector General of the State Department was a guy named Cookie Krongard, whose brother, the former executive director of the CIA, Buzzy Krongard, actually was hired on by Prince to serve on his advisory board. So we have a lot of very incestuous relationships here between the government and Blackwater and key individuals who were responsible for these contracts, and some still are.
I think that little clip sheds a lot of light on the big picture. So it's just about the cozy relationship between the U.S. government and Blackwater, but it gets into the Crusades, the Freemasons, the Knights Templars, prostitution, slavery, private military contractors, all of it is right there in that clip with Wayne Madsen on Russia Today. Furthermore, on that from Press TV, State Department upholds Blackwater license to kill. That's right, we just heard them say that in the clip. We've re-upped the contracts. Change you can believe in. But from the Associated Press, Lindy England talk canceled after threats. A lecture by the woman who became the public face of the Abu Ghraib scandal was canceled last Friday at the Library of Congress after threats caused concerns about staff safety. Former Army reservist Lindy England had been scheduled to discuss her biography as part of a veterans forum on Capitol Hill. The book by author Gary S. Winkler is called Tortured: Lindy England, Abu Ghraib, and the Photographs That Shocked the World. Members of the Library of Congress Professional Association, the employee group holding the talk, received an email from President Angela Kinney saying the event was canceled due to staff safety concerns. A spokeswoman for the library said Kenny would not comment further. The group had received, quote, numerous expressions of protest, end quote, about the lecture from its members. And it's interesting that they note staff safety. They worry about staff safety. Would that mean it would be crazy, homegrown, liberal terrorists? Now, I'm not suggesting for a second that Lindy England doesn't deserve all the derision heaped on her. And fortunately, she was not actually born in West Virginia. She was born, I believe, in Kentucky and moved into West Virginia. So I'd take that as some kind of solace. Wyoming and Guam civil support teams hold anti-terror drill. That's from guampdn.com. But from Danger Room, UK anti-terror technology 007 or 1984. The British government is launching a new initiative for technology to fight terrorism, as the BBC report says. This will involve, quote, real-life versions of the scientist Q in the 007 films, end quote, getting funding for gadgets to defeat groups like Al-Qaeda. The BBC even uses a picture of the fictional Q, but a closer look at the initiative suggests that much of the technology being sought is closer to George Orwell than James Bond. DARPA have previously investigated brain screening technologies when might be able to detect intent, which led some concern about prosecutions for, thought crime. And also, DARPA's rapid checkpoint screening program looked at a range of physiological indicators to see whether it would be possible to spot whether someone was lying at a checkpoint interview. The answer appears to be yes. And whether, of course, that technology could be extended to read the body language, pulse rate, and so on of people just standing in line. Omnipresent CCTV cameras are a fact of life here in the UK, though their effectiveness in combating crime and terrorism is still a matter of debate. The Evening Standard newspaper complained that in spite of over 10,000 official CCTV cameras, 80% of crimes in London remain unsolved. The existing network means that, unlike in the U.S., it would be relatively easy to deploy new technology to detect hostile intention alongside or within the CCTV setup. Admiral Lord West, Britain's counter-terror minister, also mentioned to the BBC that there were other initiatives which include countering cyber-terrorism and investigating how to intercept new methods of telecommunications. New technology is clearly on the way, and it's not just about providing James Bond with a boat-stopping bazooka. As I've said and coined, they're going to punch you in the Facebook. National Guard exercise hits Western New York, again tied in with vibrant response. However, they're just getting set for even more preparation for a full-scale exercise coming November 1st through the 9th. More on that from dvidshub.net. From antiwar.com, Israeli troops killed unarmed Gazans carrying white flags, the latest in a long line of charges of war crimes by Israeli forces during January's invasion of the Gaza Strip. A new report by Human Rights Watch, HRW.org, cites investigations and reports of eyewitnesses who say Israeli soldiers shot 11 unarmed Palestinians, including 5 women and 4 children, who were waving white flags at them. More links to antiwar.com, as well as Haaretz and the Jerusalem Post, Yahoo, Human Rights Watch, on and on. The last note on this ugly rundown of the police state, geopolitics, war whores, and more: fighter jets collide and crash into houses near Moscow. That's from Wikinews. And now, I'm past time telling you that we're into hour number 2 of episode 137 of Media Monarchy. It's August 21st, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. Again, always thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FrOlympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org from right here in Portland, Oregon. Let's keep the pace going. Geopolitics, border wars, organ theft, and corporate coups. First, from the AFP, Mexican army takes over customs on the U.S. border. Mexico's army took control of customs Sunday on the busy U.S. border as federal authorities pulled agents off the job in a massive anti-corruption shakeup. An Interior Ministry official said the dismissals were being carried out at all Mexican border facilities and that the customs agents were being replaced. Customs agents were sacked after some were found to be linked to contraband operations, according to sources at the ministry. About 1,100 agents were fired. Mexico and the U.S. share a border that stretches some 2,000 miles and are partners with Canada in the North American Free Trade Agreement. Mexico is, of course, in the midst of a raging war on organized crime and has expressed serious concern about U.S. weapons crossing into the country. That ain't all we should be concerned about spilling across. During a visit to Mexico last week, Obama praised Calderon for his controversial military crackdown on the country's drug gangs, which involves more than 36,000 troops. That meeting, of course, is the continuation of the Security and Prosperity Partnership toward a North American Union. Drug-related violence claims 33 in Mexico. That's from Press TV. Chinese villagers storm a factory blamed for the lead poisoning of 600 children. That's from The Guardian. And that's another example of downtrodden, poor, regular old Chinese folks getting really pissed off and storming the castle. Israelis furious over Swedish papers' claim of organ theft. This by way of raw story, a Swedish newspaper's uncorroborated claim that IDF soldiers have been killing Palestinians and selling their organs has sparked a firestorm in Israel, where an official spokesman called the allegations medieval blood libel. The claims were so offensive to Israeli officials, they ordered the nation's embassy in Stockholm to demand the Swedish government condemn the paper. A full English translation of the report was not immediately available. Automatic translation services were unable to piece together a legible English recounting, as I was unable to do that as well. Israelis furious over the Swedish paper's claim of Palestinian organ theft. More on that. More on the blood libel. More from Raw Story. But gosh, that sure reminds me of that recent bust we had in New Jersey of a lot of God and government officials being involved in a lot of black market dirty dealing. It was mostly about money and power. However, there are allegations of organ selling, and this involved rabbis in New Jersey. Connect that dot. A new article on informationclearinghouse.info, Honduras military coup engineered by two U.S. companies? Question mark. This article is by John Perkins, author of the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I believe John Perkins probably knows what he's talking about when he's talking about the CIA and Chiquita and Dole. And of course, this ties in with Kissinger and ITT and Zelaya and Panama Banks and all that. The recent military coup, and of course, the U.S. has nothing to say, and we completely support it. And of course, some of the guys that led the coup were trained at Fort Benning, School of the Americas, or whatever new ridiculous name it goes under, where we train people to go out and be thugs and dictators. The last note on geopolitics, amid bombs and bullets, Afghanistan votes. That is from Danger Room, and I'm sure if we glance at Google News right now, there's probably something about it on the front, and of course there is. We have Karzai and Abdullah both claiming victory in Afghanistan. Now, I do have to mention, of course, that as far as world puppet leaders go, Hamid Karzai is easily the snazziest, best-looking guy. He's always got awesome capes and hats and shit. He's fly for a puppet. We're now going to get into all the latest on Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. And how we're going to do this is a great 5-minute clip from author, noted thinker, and critic, John Pilger, where he notes, quite succinctly, quite credibly, quite amazingly, that Obama is a corporate marketing creation.
The clever young man who recently made it to the White House is a very fine hypnotist, partly because it is indeed extraordinary to see an African-American at the pinnacle of power in the land of slavery. However, this is the 21st century, and race, together with gender and even class, can be very seductive tools of propaganda. For what is so often overlooked and what matters, I believe, above all, is the class one serves. George Bush's inner circle, from the State Department to the Supreme Court, was perhaps the most multiracial in presidential history. It was PC par excellence. Think Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell. It was also the most reactionary. Obama's very presence in the White House appears to reaffirm the moral nation. He's a marketing dream. But like Calvin Klein or Benetton, he is a brand that promises something special, something exciting, almost risque, as if he might be radical, as if he might enact change. He makes people feel good. He's a postmodern man with no political baggage, and all that's fake. In his book, Dreams from My Father, Obama refers to the job he took after he graduated from Columbia in 1983. He describes his employer as, and I quote, a consulting house to multinational corporations, unquote. For some reason, he doesn't say who his employer was or what he did there. The employer was Business International Corporation, which has a long history of providing cover for the CIA with covert action and infiltrating unions and the left. I know this because it was especially active in my own country, Australia. Obama doesn't say what he did at Business International, and there may be absolutely nothing sinister, but it seems worthy of inquiry and debate as a clue to perhaps who the man is. During his brief period in the Senate, Obama voted to continue the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He voted for the Patriot Act. He refused to support a bill for single-payer health care. He supported the death penalty. As a presidential candidate, he received more corporate backing than John McCain. He promised to close Guantanamo as a priority, but instead he's excused torture, reinstated military commissions, kept Bush Gulag intact, and opposed habeas corpus. Daniel Ellsberg, the great whistleblower, was right, I believe, when he said that under Bush a military coup had taken place in the United States, giving the Pentagon unprecedented powers. These powers have been reinforced by the presence of Robert Gates, a Bush family crony, and George W. Bush's powerful Secretary of Defense, and by all the Bush Pentagon officials and generals who have kept their jobs under Obama. In the middle of a recession, with millions of Americans losing their jobs and homes, Obama has increased the military budget. In Colombia, he is planning to spend $46 million on a new military base that will support a regime backed by death squads and further the tragic history of Washington's intervention in that region. In a pseudo event in Prague, Obama promised a world without nuclear weapons to a global audience mostly unaware that America is building new tactical nuclear weapons designed to blur the distinction between nuclear and conventional war. Like George Bush, he used the absurdity of Europe threatened by Iran to justify building a missile system aimed at Russia and China. In another pseudo event at the Annapolis Naval Academy, decked with flags and uniforms, Obama lied that America had gone to Iraq to bring freedom to that country. He announced that the troops were coming home. This was another deception. The head of the Army, General George Casey, says with some authority that America will be in Iraq for up to a decade. Other generals say 15 years. Chris Hedges, the very fine author of Empire of Illusion, puts it very well. President Obama, he wrote, does one thing and Brian Obama gets you to believe another. This is the essence of successful advertising. You buy or do what the advertiser wants because of how they make you feel. Unquote. And so you are kept in perpetual state of childishness. He calls this Trump politics.
John Pilger. I should have opened the show with that clip. It so succinctly gets to what has been pulled over our eyes. It's all right there. It completely breaks it down. And again, not to keep always harping on this, the controlled demolition and the ballistics and the birth certificates don't get to what John Pilger just got to. And that's, on some level, far more simple, but on another level, far more complicated and interlocking and esoteric. You been had. Would you like more proof? Obama camp plants a fake doctor and a Shea fan at a recent Jackson Lee forum. This from the LoneStarTimes.com, where they write, they were reading the Houston Chronicle's piece about Sheila Jackson Lee's town hall when something caught my eye. A quote, one supporter, Dr. Roxana Meyer, a physician who does not live in Jackson Lee's district, praised the reform plan for overhauling a broken system. I don't know what's in the bill that creates such panic, she said. In the video, which is linked up, Dr. Roxana Meyer claims to be a general practitioner, eliciting applause and even a hug from Queen Sheila. Not sure why, but something didn't smell right, so colleagues and I did a little bit of digging, and wouldn't you know it, Roxana Meyer is, like, totally not a doctor. But she is an Obama campaign volunteer, with a link to my.barackobama.com. Lone Star Times' David Jennings secured a phone interview in which Meyer admitted to impersonating a physician, saying, get this, she thought it would help her credibility. It didn't. Now, here's where it spins off into a whole new dimension of weird. In the photos and in the videos that are all linked up for you, see the bug-eyed woman sitting behind the not-Dr. Mayor look familiar? Yes, that little ray of sunshine who accompanied Mayor to the meeting is none other than Maria Isabel, the unhinged moonbat who ran a Barack Obama campaign office complete with Che Guevara flag. Hell, she's even wearing the exact same outfit she wore the last time we mocked her. A word of advice to budding political operatives, when you need two plants, try to pick people smarter than actual plants. This isn't brain surgery. And perhaps you've seen the joke that she should call Democrat town halls greenhouses because there's so many plants in them. We now get to the massive list of Obamasiah updates, health scare, war crimes, voodoo, and economics. We'll start it off with something I think that makes a little more sense. And the Obama as Joker meme exploded. But again, we end up talking about how we talk about stuff instead of talking about the actual issues. A photo posted up that makes a little more sense. Obama as Two-Face. How about that? White House appears ready to drop the public option. That's from the Associated Press. However, from Global Research, it's official. Healthcare reform is dead. Washington's blog goes into Obama being worse than Herbert Hoover. When Obama was elected, many compared him to a modern-day FDR, with a link to Time magazine, for example. On the other hand, financial writer Ed Harrison has called Obama a black Herbert Hoover. Who's right? It is true that Hoover, like Obama, did not force any meaningful change or reform to the banking or financial system. It is true that Hoover, like Obama, appointed as his top economic advisors banking insiders. It is true that Hoover, like Obama, is trying to paper over the crash with happy talk. But unlike Hoover, Team Obama has printed tens of trillions of dollars and instead of giving the money to consumers or the real economy, is throwing the money at the biggest banks. And again, unlike Hoover, Team Obama is massively manipulating the markets in so many ways that it's impossible to keep track. The plunge protection team exists. Majority of Americans directly oppose Obamanomics. This by way of Steve Watson, citing a new Gallup poll where 57% say the so-called economic stimulus package is having no impact on the economy or making it worse, with a link to USA Today. Obama lies to defend that U.S. war of aggression in Afghanistan. That's from Examiner.com. Cindy Sheehan is back. Fortunately, she had her old shit moment a long time ago, protesting Obama continuing the Bush wars. Rahm Emanuel, Obama Sia's chief of staff and dual Israeli citizen and proponent of National Service for You, boot camp. A piece from the New York Times, Rahm Emanuel wields power freely but faces risks. Valerie Jarrett, one of Obama's cronies who's now in the White House, says, you know, that we should just trust Obama on Blackwater. That's from RebelReports.com. Obama's well-organized community is falling apart. That's from Canada Free Press. Fascinating couple of videos and articles, and I have not gone into this very deeply yet. Witchcraft in the White House. We've got one that was originally up on townhall.com, reactionary right-winger website, but a piece from Kristen Atkinson on her blog Atkinson's Advice called Witchcraft in the White House. The original link is dead. I'm not sure if she tried to pull it. I've got a cache of the article linked up for you, and you can, of course, find it in other places. But she starts off that the Obama White House is abuzz with talk of witchcraft by first grandmother, 72-year-old Marion Robinson, who lives in the White House residence. A close friend of Michelle Obama says the president is furious at his mother-in-law after learning that she was practicing Santeria, an African spirit cult, in the White House. Now, does this tie into Sasha and Malia and Reverend Wright and the Trinity United Church? God knows. But there's interviews with Tex Mars on witchcraft in the White House and more from Alex Jones and InfoWars TV, Voodoo in Obama's White House. As long as we're mentioning this, this is something that comes up quite a bit, and especially as things get more and more and more bizarre. The occult and the esoteric are something I'm interested in and that I study. I do not go into it very much on MediaMonarchy.com. Essentially because if I can't get you to realize that Obama's a corporate frontman and the Federal Reserve makes our money at interest and they're shooting you up with poison and plan to microchip you and take over our cities, then you're certainly not going to get into the occult and the esoteric and the sinister forces. But you should. I'm not saying stay away from it by any stretch, and perhaps we'll go into voodoo in the White House in the future. However, further down the list, death to Obama sign holder detained by Secret Service. That's from NBCWashington.com. Westchester man charged with making false bomb threats against the White House. That's from the Los Angeles Times. And Frank Rich on the Microsoft National Broadcasting Corporation General Electric with fake opposition Rachel Maddow. Frank Rich fears extremism will lead to the A-word.
Joining us now is New York Times columnist Frank Rich. His most recent piece on Sunday gives some historical context to the gun-toting protesters that are showing up at these town hall events. Mr. Rich, it's nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
In your column this weekend, you talked about similarities between the political climate today and the political climate in the early 60s, of course, looming large in that political climate, the assassination of John Kennedy. In 1963. Were you intending to make that explicit allegory because you're worried about assassination attempts?
You know, the truth is I've been worried for some time, even before the events surrounding these healthcare town halls. It began during the campaign where people were shouting treason and worse about Obama, Palin rallies, and essentially no one would in the Republican Party would condemn it. There were people, you know, appearing in sort of Nazi regalia and all the rest of it. And it's just been stepping up ever since then. The Department of Homeland Security, as you know, released a report in April talking about a rise in 1990s-like militia activity on the far right.
A rise in 1990s-like militia talk. Gee, that sure sounds like I've been mentioning that for the last year. So again, what we try and do in the alternative media is hit you with what's going to happen. prep it. And we ain't geniuses. We just spend a ridiculous amount of time studying the news and the data mining and the media memes. Here's another bit, and again, more references to my beleaguered home state of West Virginia. John D. Rockefeller IV, you know, the guy who recently said maybe it'd be better if the internet was never invented. He, of course, regards the new science czar as walking on water.
The president, I think, has surrounded himself with some of the most brilliant choices. Dr. Holden, I don't want to embarrass you, but I sometimes refer to you as walking on water.
There you go. So, the connections, of course, between Rockefeller's and eugenics and Dr. Holdren and his book Ecoscience and Forced Abortions and Vaccines and all the rest of it are coming soon. Another video, Tom DeLay on with Chris Matthews. He's been outed as a birther, and he wants to see Obama's gift certificate. I mean, birth certificate. He does actually say gift certificate, but he catches and corrects himself, so it's not quite as funny as if he were oblivious to it. So no clip for you, Tom DeLay. Four arrested for protesting John Yoo at Berkeley. That's from Washington Post. Tom Ridge says that the Bush administration pushed to raise the terror alert for the 2004 election. Further proof, it was all politicized, the threat levels, if you will. Lastly, a great one from pubrecord.org, the top 50 U.S. war criminals who need to be prosecuted. That's from Alberto to you, and so much more. A lot of the names you would recognize, some of the folks you wouldn't, but again, they all have names, they all have addresses. John Yoo, Jay Bybee, Michael Dunleavy, Diane Beaver, Colin Powell, Henry Kissinger, Michael Mukasey, George W. Bush, Karen Hughes, Paul Bremer, Dick Cheney, John Rizzo, David Addington, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, George Tenet, John Ashcroft, Alberto Gonzalez, Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, Elliot Abrams, Karl Rove, Louis Libby, Mary Madeline, Stephen Hadley, James Wilkinson, John Bolton, Michael Chertoff, Tim Flanagan, Alice Fisher, John Bellinger, John Negroponte, Jonathan Fredman, Scott Mueller, Dusty Fago, Andrew Card, Killer Stanley McChrystal, James Mitchell, Tommy Franks, Michael Hayden, and heck, just to make it a full deck of 52, we'll throw in Bruce Jensen and Eric Prince. Eric Prince, of course, of Blackwater. Bruce Jensen mentioned last week from the New York Times piece that exposed him and Jim Mitchell as being behind Interrogation Incorporated. Guys who had no experience, but they had studied the Chinese model of torture. Moving quickly now to the 820 News Purge, Leary, Cho, Stone, Disney, S&M, and surveillance. First, a couple history mystery notes. Timothy Leary and the CIA, by way of Alex Constantine, as if you didn't know. Supreme Court, this is good news. Supreme Court has ordered a review of death row inmate Troy Davis's case. However, an interesting piece from Consortium News goes into the recent release of Manson family member Squeaky Frome. However, Leonard Peltier still sits and rots in jail. Inequality of mercy. From the Washington Post, Cho's missing mental records released. Virginia Tech gunman's records reveal a lack of treatment. The missing mental health records of Sung-Wee Cho released Wednesday afternoon provide more evidence that Virginia Tech's counseling center and the state's mental health system failed to recognize, communicate, and treat the gunman's increasingly erratic behavior. But the triage forms, emails, and post-it notes provide no window into Cho's tortured mind. The bizarre thing about all this is that the documents just went home with some former employee for some reason. But thankfully, Virginia Governor Tim Kaine has pushed for the release of these records. Couple notes on the media memes. FCC's chief diversity officer, of course, is going to target talk radio. Michael Vail of blacklistednews.com has a great original article on this. Freedom of speech under fire. more on the Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine's dead. Long live the Fairness Doctrine! And interestingly enough, from PopEater.com, indictments are coming in the Michael Jackson case. Oliver Stone is going to be dropping his big 10-part secret history of America. Hopefully it'll be good. Hopefully he will expose a lot. Hopefully it will not be limited hangout garbage that has kind of been his deal for the last 10 years. Your Tax Dollars at Work from Michael Bay. DavidBordwell.net goes into that. And of course, Michael Bay, Pearl Harbor, Transformers, in bed with a military-industrial media complex. And a fascinating one from The Telegraph, why the recession will lead to a renaissance in film noir. I'd rather spend time on that. However, we got to get to murder and mayhem and war horrors and more. Gunman kills 7 women in a Russian sauna. That's from the Times Online. Woman sets herself on fire in a West Dade, Miami, Florida mall. That's from the Miami Herald. Lauren Coleman of The Copycat Effect goes more into this savage boutique immolation. He also goes into the 3rd Disney World death in 7 weeks. Anything involving the Walt Disney World is always fascinating in the world of copycat, Twilight Effect, Twilight Language, Sinister Forces. And from ABC News, a lawyer killed in alleged S&M triangle at a prestigious New York law firm. Oh. But on to the war horse from Danger Room. New Army camera promises super-wide surveillance. Expert warns new mind drugs eyed by the military. That's from ABC News. Poll shows most Americans oppose the war in Afghanistan. That's from the Washington Post. But Iraq forces admit lapses after blast kill 95. That's from AlertNet. And so then what happens? U.S. troops to return to northern Iraq. This from The Telegraph. The move, in order to help prevent civil war between Kurds and Arabs, would be a departure from the security pact that called for Americans to pull back from populated areas on June 30th. General Ray Odierno, the U.S. commander in Iraq, plans to quell the rise in violence in the north, despite the whole, you know, we're getting out of Iraq thing. From the Deutsche Press Agency, the CIA hired Blackwater to help hunt terrorists. CIA hired Blackwater for assassin program. That's from the Washington Post. I believe we've learned more that the CIA hired Blackwater to load bombs onto some drones. Lithuania hosted a secret CIA prison. That's again from the Deutsche Press Agency. And lastly, from ABC out of Australia, the UK, well, they can't find $13 billion worth of military hardware. Auditors have been unable to find 6.6 billion pounds, that's $13 billion worth of British military equipment, including vehicles, weapons, and radios used by troops. The government has ordered a shake-up at the Ministry of Defense after the auditors found holes in its record-keeping. So are the weapons and all those things actually missing? Or is it just bad bookkeeping? A bureaucratic bungle. This next story is something I believe that they go over in the chemistry and society course at my old college. But here it is again from the BBC. 95% of U.S. banknotes show cocaine traces. The largest study of banknotes has found that 95% of dollar bills in the District of Criminals bear traces of the illegal drug cocaine. The figure for the U.S. Capitol is up 20% over 2 years. Researchers at the University of Massachusetts in Dartmouth tested notes from more than 30 cities worldwide. They say the rise observed in the U.S. may be due to increased drug use caused by higher stress levels linked to the global economic downturn. Banknotes can pick up traces of cocaine directly from users snorting it through rolled up bills or when cash is stacked together. Besides Washington, other big U.S. cities such as Baltimore, Boston, and Detroit had the highest average cocaine levels on their dollar bills. Dr. Yugang Zuo, Z-U-O, who led the research, said, quote, "To my surprise, we're finding more and more cocaine in banknotes. I'm not sure why we've seen this apparent increase, but it could be related to the economic downturn, with stressed people turning to cocaine. Other countries where notes were tested were Canada, Brazil, China, and Japan. China had the lowest rates, with only 12% of its bills contaminated. In the U.S., the cleanest bills were collected from, guess which city? That's right, Salt Lake City, Utah, baby, home of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, better known as the Mormons. With a comment from Grundoon on this posting, they just want to imagine an entire nation sniffing the dollar bill surreptitiously at some point in the near future. I would think all of us pink slip people are actually renting out our bathrooms in order to come up with the next bag of weed. Which makes sense. Yeah. Gosh, I sure don't have much money. Maybe I'll buy the most expensive drug that's readily available. And, you know, really, I mean, you know what coke makes you want to do. More coke. But now that we've chopped out some lines, let's get into the Econo Crash, the Fed, Graves, Reader's Digest, and DIY Tobacco. First, from the Washington Post again, jobless spike compounds foreclosure crisis. But getting deeper into it, Washington's blog points out that it's no wonder the poker game is ending. The wealthiest have taken all of the chips. But from Reuters, they note that the Federal Reserve is running low on ammo. Last Monday, the Fed announced it had purchased another $7 billion worth of treasuries under its quantitative easing program. Readers will recall that in the last week's FOMC statement, the Fed said it was extending the treasury purchase by a month to the end of October, while maintaining its total purchase commitment of $300 billion. Rolf Winkler, who writes this Reuters blog called Option Armageddon about the Fed running low on ammo, has the charts, has the graphs, and it's pretty plain. That's why the poker game is ending. Colonial Bank Group fails and sold to BB&T. That was last week's FDIC Friday. We brace ourselves for how many banks we'll see close today. And again, record-breaking numbers already. That's from CNN. Is the Bank of Montreal, Canada's fourth largest bank, about to crash? U.S. preparing to prosecute 150 UBS account holders. We went into that a while ago, and it's, of course, getting into some of the secret banking. Now, of course, it'll probably just burn the lower-level folks. Now it gets interesting. Pressed to dig up cash, owners market their cemetery plots. That's again from the Washington Post. And again, you can sleep when you're dead. Doesn't really matter where you are. Sell your cemetery plot. Paul Craig Roberts has a new piece on Americans, serfs ruled by the oligarchs. However, in more sad econo crash news, Reader's Digest plans to file for bankruptcy. Another piece from another luminary, this time from Warren Buffett, who was, of course, at Offutt Air Force Base when Bush landed there on the morning of 9/11, and they were just having their annual golf tournament where Ann Tatlock of Fiduciary Trust would have been in the World Trade Center where the plane slammed into the offices, but she was there with the bigwigs watching it on TV. DIY cigarettes, some growing their own tobacco. This again from click2houston.com. Actually, I believe I just subscribed to their offbeat news feed, and we get things like this. Homegrown tobacco cheaper, but labor intensive. Something unusual is cropping up alongside the tomatoes, eggplant, and okra in Scott Byers' veggie garden. The elephantine leaves of 30 tobacco plants. Driven largely by ever-rising tobacco prices, he's among a growing number of smokers who have turned to their green thumbs to cultivate tobacco plants to blend their own cigarettes, cigars, and chew. Byers normally pays $5 for a 5-pack of cigars and $3 for a tin of snuff. The seed cost him $9. That's coming out of, appropriately enough, Richmond, Virginia. From the USA Today, panning for gold makes a comeback in bad economy. We're really seeing some amazing things happening, my friends, as we mentioned a little bit ago. We'll at least see a resurge in film noir, but now we're going to see squatting, people growing their own tobacco, panning for gold, selling your cemetery plot, Reader's Digest bankrupt. And what closes this out was one update I added this morning to this EconoCrash posting on the Fed, Graves, Reader's Digest, and DIY Tobacco. It's from Larry Flint. Yes, that Larry Flint has a new piece up on Huffington Post. And it is called Common Sense 2009. And let's just hit you with a quick quote where he says, quote, "The real war is not between the left and the right. It is between the average American and the ruling class who would make us their slaves." That's Larry Flint. Now, say what you want about what he does, but as someone said, I may not agree with what you have to say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it. Larry Flint, always a rabid First Amendment supporter. Let's jump now, my friends, to cyberspacewar.com. One of my new sister sites under MediaMonarchy.com, along with FoodWorldOrder.com, which we'll get to in just a minute. CyberspaceWar.com is up. It has a couple posts on there. I am not done formatting it. It kind of looks like a shell. But go ahead and bookmark it. Go ahead and subscribe to the feed, because in a short amount of time, hopefully CyberspaceWar.com will be up and running for you. The way we're going to kick it off on CyberspaceWar.com is so appropriate. Building block of life found on comet. This from Reuters. The amino acid glycine, a fundamental building block of proteins, has been found in a comet for the first time, bolstering the theory that raw ingredients of life arrived on Earth from outer space. Microscopic traces of glycine were discovered in a sample of particles retrieved from the tail of a comet, Wild 2, by the NASA spacecraft Stardust, deep in the solar system some 242 million miles from Earth in January 04. Samples of gas and dust collected on a small dish lined with a super fluffy material called aerogel were returned to Earth 2 years later in a canister that detached from the spacecraft and landed by parachute in the Utah desert. Comets like Wild 2, named for astronomer Paul Wild, actually pronounced Wild, are believed to contain well-preserved grains of material dating from the dawn of the solar system billions of years ago, and thus clues to the formation of the sun and planets. Did life on Earth begin from space? This is something that my man Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge has gone into, and even some of the great recent interviews, I believe with Freeman of FreemanTV.com recently on Red Ice Radio. So let's get some more headlines on the cyberspace war front, but back to MediaMonarchy.com if you can keep up. Comets, IBM, DNA, CyberCom, and Pointless Babble, we repost the important story from Reuters, Building Block of Life Found on Comet. And again, we see, from the media, from the news, all the data mining we do, it's all coming together. Quickly, though, 4 million pounds of space junk pollute Earth's orbit. IBM uses human DNA to make next-generation microchips. Be very afraid. FederalNewsRadio.com asks if Maryland will be the home of the CyberCom, and of course it will. Air Force establishes a reduced CyberCom, that's from Wired, and Press TV says U.S. military cyber force activated, that's from, rather, theregister.co.uk. A U.S. man stole 130 million credit card numbers. He's called the TJX hacker, and he's charged with the Heartland and Hanford breaches. That's a big story and kind of ugly. UK intel agencies have a new terrorist Facebook to find links between the players. I wonder if they'll connect themselves. 40% of Twitter messages are pointless babble, according to a new study, this reported by the AFP. And a new plugin for the Firefox browser frees court records and threatens judiciary profits. The plugin is called Recap, and it's a play on the documents finder called Pacer. But on to EnviroHealth. Weather Wars, DNA, Fat Gamers, and Fake Data. First, a new article from Time Magazine pushing the CFR's geoengineering agenda. They're going to do it. Weather Wars, chemtrails, HARP, it's all on. From BizJournals.com, global warming bill could cost 2.4 million jobs. That's about $1,250 a house. DNA evidence can be fabricated. Scientists show, that's from the New York Times. Global warming ate my data, says the Register. A new study reported by the BBC shows that video gamers are, quote, older, less healthy, fatter, and more depressed. Overdose of Tylenol sends an estimated 7,000+ U.S. kids to the hospital every year. Lastly, on this Enviro Health note, Greenpeace head admits that the organization put out fake global warming data.
But when you, in one of your press releases that I read July 15, say this, and this is Greenpeace's own press release, quote, as permanent ice decreases, we are looking at ice-free summers in the Arctic as early as 2030. I mean, that's just plain misleading, isn't it?
I don't think it is plain misleading. I know that there's uncertainties.
But the Arctic includes the Greenland ice sheet. I mean, the Greenland ice sheet is in the Arctic. That's not going to melt by 2030. That's preposterous.
Greenland ice sheet is already retreating, and the people there can tell it.
The Greenland ice sheet, from which I have just come, is 1.6 million square kilometers. It is 3 kilometers thick in the middle. Mm-hmm. It has been there for hundreds of thousands of years. It survived previous warming periods much warmer than we see today or will see tomorrow. There is no way that ice sheet is going to disappear.
What we have said, by and large, over the last 20 years, I think, was wise and was rational and reasonable to it. And we were confronted with a world which, unfortunately, only recently has woken up to it. That we, as a pressure group, have to emotionalize issues, and we're not ashamed of emotionalizing issues, I think it's a fact.
You call it emotionalizing, others would call it scare tactics. Will you sit here now and tell me that you, in all honesty, do not believe that the Greenland ice sheet is going to melt by 2030?
I don't know. I don't think it will be melting by 2030.
So, in fact, would you say that it was a mistake for your organization to put that out?
That may have been a mistake. I don't know this specific press release. I do not check every press release of it.
Fake data. Quickly, the latest on Biowars and swine flu updates, zombies, mass graves, and video games. Let's get an update on those recent military drills on the vaccine riots.
In the town of South Paris, dozens of National Guard troops dressed in riot gear spent the day fighting off angry crowds desperately trying to get their hands on vaccinations against the H1N1 flu. At least that's what it all looked like. This was a drill, however, for guardsmen in the event of a swine flu pandemic. Steve Minnick has more from Oxford Hills High School.
Now, what you see here is a situation these National Guardsmen and police hope they never have to deal with. But there is the possibility, since Oxford Hills High School is a dispensing point for the vaccination.
During riots, you know, hey, there's the medicine, we want it now. They're going to overwhelm the local PDs.
It's a what-if worst-case scenario. What if local police were not enough to quell crowds of people so panicked to get a flu shot they turn violent? Well, that is when they call in the National Guard.
We're treating every situation as it's actually happening. We try to train as we fight, we say in the military.
You guys be loud and boisterous. Might cause some confusion.
This drill's designed to look and feel as realistic as possible, right down to the actual pepper spray and live tasers. These guardsmen don't know what to expect. While most of the crowd help them with eggs and bottles, Ryan Levesque pretends he's just an innocent onlooker. Eventually, though, he unsuccessfully attempts to break through the fence.
The whole time they thought I was a student here, and I jumped that fence. They find out I'm on four, and they're going to be pretty upset.
In this drill, the trouble is created by people showing up without proper ID or living outside the designated vaccination area. All potential real-life scenarios. Ultimately, the guard makes many arrests and is forced to shut this vaccination site down.
Hopefully not real at all, but we will train just in case we are caught up for something to happen.
Now, they say this is not to suggest this is how they expect Mainers to react, but the bottom line, they say, these troops need to be prepared for anything. In Paris, Steve Minnick, News 8.
Yep, they're just getting ready to deploy the scoops. That, of course, being a reference to Soylent Green, as, of course, we mentioned at the very top of the show, that dystopic sci-fi films pretty much lay out the agenda. Everything else from here on out is going to have to be pretty quick, and I'm not going to be able to do it justice. However, I should always point out, and I should start this at the top of the show by saying, everything you hear on the podcast is printed up and linked up and embedded, and there's so much for you to research on your own on Media Monarchy. I think what people like about the site and what I try and do with it is that I give you the avenues that you can do more of your own research. I don't tell you what to believe. I just lay it out and say, I don't think they're telling the truth about this. Such as the swine flu. This latest from the Daily Mail, swine flu jab linked to killer nerve disease. That would be GBS, Guillain-Barré syndrome. A leaked letter reveals concerns of neurologists over 25 deaths in the U.S. And that's, of course, all tied in to the coming swine flu pandemic coming soon to a town near you. A third of U.K. nurses will refuse to have the swine flu jab. That's my way again of the Daily Mail, but from the Sun out of the UK, plans drawn up for mass swine flu graves. Plans for mass graves have been drawn up to cope with the second wave of swine flu this autumn, with a photo documentation for you. From Global Research, pandemic vaccination, why you should be concerned. But from the Astoria Times, more on mass graves. The New York boroughs are preparing for fall swine flu cases. At the Metropolitan Funeral Directors Association, telling funeral directors and morticians to prep for possible 50 to 85,000 deaths. There's a video further documenting the link between Baxter, great big pharma vaccine maker, and their connections to DynCorp, of course connected to child kidnapping and slavery and all those things with Blackwater all around the world. DynCorp holds some of the new patents to the H1N1, and those patents, of course, have the name 666. Solutions to help those forced to take the swine flu vaccine. That's from ClaireSwinney.wordpress.com. What to do if you actually have to take the thing and how to hopefully flush your system out. The military confirms that the states are deciding on mandatory vaccination. That's from We Are Change Colorado. Battling swine flu in space. That's from BBC. And there's a new game that you can go play at thegreatflu.com. Yippee! Evangelical Christian and director of the National Institutes for Health, Francis Collins. The Washington Times points out that he speaks the language of God, because that's the name of his new book. From the Great Beyond blog on nature.com, the mathematical modeling of zombie attacks. A new study and a new paper called When Zombies Attack, done by Canadian researchers. Zombies will likely kill everyone. We can do a whole show on that, and perhaps we should. They want to inject my kids with what? Massive, massive documentation on the great vaccine swindle. They want to inject my kids with what? And a couple updates. The ever-growing list of dead scientists, 87 and counting. What did they do, and what did they know about the coming biowar? The last is a nice little photo slideshow from Time Magazine, Thermal Scanners Hunting for Swine Flu. We quickly jump to foodworldorder.com, and I can just blast through the headlines for you. Shocking. Disturbing. These get a lot of comments when I post these into the F-book. The food stuff gets people going. Foodworldorder.com. Monsanto to charge as much as 42% for their new seeds, their new Roundup Ready 2 yield soybeans. A great article from the Ethiopian Review on Fiji water. Spin the bottle. The politics of water, where we have to point out that nowhere in Fiji's glossy marketing materials where you find references to the typhoid outbreaks that plague Fijians because of the island's faulty water supplies, the corporate entities that Fiji Water has, despite the owner's talk of financial conspiracies, or rather transparency, well, Freudian slip, they've set up tax havens like the Cayman Islands and Luxembourg, or the fact that its signature bottle's made from Chinese plastic in a diesel-fueled plant and hauled thousands of miles to its eco-conscious consumers. And, of course, you won't find mention of the military junta, for which Fiji water is a major source of global recognition and legitimacy. There's a new food obsession, a pure food obsession, and it's the latest eating disorder. According to new studies by the British Dietetic Association, it's called, get ready, orthorexia nervosa. Orthorexia nervosa. A new documentary, I don't have time to play the clip for you, it's called Bananas, with an exclamation point and an asterisk. The asterisk possibly denoting its difference and unrelation to Woody Allen's Bananas. The new documentary exposes Dole's poisonous practices. The last thing on foodworldorder.com by way of the Huffington Post, but it's my headline, corporate dietitian on corporate TV says to eat corporate food. Matt Lauer hosted dietitian Elizabeth Ward, and she talks about how Burger King, Taco Bell, and KFC can give you a healthy alternative for food when you're on the road. The last thing, closing it out nicely, or rather, really disturbing, because this is the shape of things to come, my friends. Kids buying their lunch with a fingerprint.
Well, some new technology is helping to make sure young kids cannot lose their school lunch money. As Daniel Seberg explained, some schools are setting up prepaid accounts that students access with the touch of their finger.
At lunchtime, the students of the West End Elementary School in Rome, Georgia, use their fingers for more than just eating.
Go ahead, Patrick.
They also use them for identification in paying for their lunch. The children's parents prepay into an account and deductions are made each mealtime. Finger scans ensure that each child's meal is deducted from the correct account.
It's just scientific.
In the past, Rome, Georgia students scanned barcode cards or punched PIN numbers into a keypad to get their meals. But the cards would get lost or damaged, and the PIN numbers would be forgotten or mistyped. There's no forgetting or losing fingers.
It has dramatically increased our time of getting our students through the line more quickly and efficiently. In this particular school, we have cut the lunch serving time 20 minutes, and we still have kindergarten, first, and second grade to implement.
School Nutrition Director Barbara Carter says the scanning system is secure. It's not connected to the internet, only the cafeteria server, and it records only 7 points on a finger, not a full finger.
Hooey! Your kids are going to buy their lunch with biometric scanning. This is what's coming, and this is why we do this on MediaMonarchy.com. Last couple seconds, we'll throw down the list of some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week, tracking them through StatCounter. We had Visa International, the Army Headquarters, CBS Corporation, Navy Network Information Center, the National Defense University, NORAD, U.S. Spacecom, and the J-6 Directorate out of Colorado Springs, Turner Broadcasting System out of Atlanta, Wyeth Research out of Newark, New Jersey, Honeywell, Pep Boys, Johnson & Johnson, the U.S. House of Representatives, General Electric, Israeli Government Network, the DoD Network Information Center, Reader's Digest, Abu Dhabi Civil Aviation, DoD Network Information, United States Air Force Academy in Colorado, and finally, Southwest Airlines out of Fort Worth, Texas. That, my friends, is going to do it for this latest jam-packed episode, 137 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 21st, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, imploring you to spread the word about the show and the information that we're trying to get out right here. My friends, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
went on with the diary, or whether he did not or not, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.